in memory of Prisoners Justice Day and all of the organizing that had gone into that, past, present, and future, because hopefully the goals of Prisoner Justice Day will be achieved one day and we won't have to have memorials anymore. But back in the 1970s, Prisoner Justice Day was started up to pay homage to those whose lives are lost at the hands of the Canadian government in our prisons throughout this country. And this year, there's been a number of deaths, just as in past years. And part of the programming at CKUT has been an effort to speak with people who are prison advocates, who are prison abolitionists, people who are on the inside or people who have been on the inside, in order to pull together some programming for this Prisoner's Justice Day, because there are no events being planned in Montreal, but yet it's still important to try to take this opportunity to raise awareness and to raise consciousness. And so in studio and on the phone, we have several prison activists and people who have spent time in prison. We'd like to take this time to talk about what the current issues are in prison, but also the individual lives that we have represented here and what their connections are to the prison industrial complex that we have here in Canada. Some of the experiences of recent years inside of those prisons, we've seen women growing as the highest or fastest growing incarceration rate in Canada is among women. There's still a disparity among First Nations representation in our prisons, 60% inside the prisons, 3% in our civilian populations. Outrageous things happening on the inside and outside within communities affected by the so-called justice system. So we have Peggy and Gabby and Rick on the line with us, and I wonder if we can just begin with some introductions. Peggy, if you want to talk about who you are and how you came into dealing with prison issues, the work that you're doing now, and we'll get to more later. That seems like a lot.
Okay, well, initially it was just being a student in criminology and seeing where the shift of focus was in the academia, and it was really far from where I thought it ought to be. And there was a professor there called Robert Gaucher, who had been going down to Collins Bay Institution in Ontario with some volunteers and kind of getting in touch and being kind of a liaison group with the prisoners inside. So I got involved in that. That's where it seemed that I felt more comfortable and the right thing to do was. And other than that, I came into Montreal and you kind of lose touch with that. And Gabby and I had been approached by a Lifeline worker here in Montreal. And he said that some of the lifers down in a federal penitentiary in Laval were interested in getting in contact with some of the community members who might be interested in coming in and volunteering. And basically that's what we've been doing for the past 2 years, it seems. And it doesn't seem much. And there's not much we do, though. Mm. That's the unfortunate thing.
Gabby?
Well, my history is similar to Peggy's. I arrived at Ottawa U a little bit later, so I wasn't involved in the Collins Bay group, but that's when I got involved in prison issues. And when I came back here, Peggy and I go to this group called Recon at the federal institution.
And Rick, on the line with us, can you give us an introduction of your life and your experience around the prison industrial complex?
Yeah, I'm Rick Solvay. I refer to myself as a retired prisoner, although I'm a lifer on parole. Serving my sentence in the community, I'm into my 23rd year of my life sentence. And been on parole now since 1995. I work with organization called Lifeline InReach and go back inside prisons and help guys adjust to incarceration and hopefully help them adjust to getting back into the community.
Well, we've heard from Phyllis Iverson about the history of Prisoners Justice Day. We've heard from Kemp Pate about the condition of women in this country and the relationship between women and women in prison. But what about today and the condition inside of prisons today across Canada? Is it much different than the 1970s, whenever Prisoners Justice Day was first taken up? Rick, maybe if you could answer that first.
Well, they painted the walls. Most of the prisons are still there. They've brought in some of the modern conveniences, but in a lot of ways we've gone backwards. You know, we bring the Inuit people from the north. We bring them down into one of the main prisons is a new prison called Fenbrook Institution, and these people are thousands and thousands and thousands of miles from home. Very few of them get visits. We're still incarcerating women into male prisons out west. So in a lot of ways, things haven't changed.
And Gabby and Peggy, in your experience inside of the penitentiaries around Montreal, what are people talking about in terms of the injustices that are happening there, or the experiences that they're having?
Well, in terms of the group that we go to, it's a minimum institution, federal institution, and they're at the end of their sentence, so we don't really delve into really what's going on in terms of deaths, because they're at their later stages, and their main focus is getting out, and that's what they basically think about, their plan and how they're going to get out the easiest way possible.
A lot of the things that they talk about is the parole process and how frustrating that could be, and the delays, and the case management workers, how that shifts, and how there's always demands made upon them to go through this process, more psychology testing, more this, more programs, all kinds of stuff like that. And a lot of the guys who've been in there for longer times that span from the 70s and 80s are really frustrated by that and feel that they prefer to do their time. Give me my parole. When it's time for me to go to my parole, I don't want to do these programs. They got nothing to do with me. And it creates kind of an atmosphere, something that they talk about in the minimum institutions anyway, an atmosphere of doing kind of like not trusting too many people around them and feeling like the demands made upon them are kind of ridiculous.
They feel basically that they're jumping through hoops, that anything that's demanded on them, they're supposed to run and jump and do it, otherwise it's going to delay them getting out.
Now, Rick, was that a sentiment that you carried while you were serving your life sentence?
Well, it was different when I was doing my time. There wasn't so much programs as there is now. But one thing that I've noticed, I think there's more people dying in prison now than ever before. Just last year, three guys that I was working with at one prison alone died. The one guy, it was an Inuit guy, and he spoke to he got transferred out from low medium into a higher medium, and went down to the Brotherhood Native Lands. Asked one of the Native workers that works the land down there, you know, what happens to you when you die? And they said, well, they send your body home. And that was the only way that he could see going home. So he ended up committing suicide. Another guy I was working with, Bob Stevenson, he was well past his parole eligibility date. Didn't know how to get out. Wasn't getting a lot of directions. And was diagnosed with cancer. And one of the things he said to me was, you know, I just don't want to die in jail. And when I talked to his case management officer, they said, well, you have to understand that he has to go through a slow, gradual release process. And, you know, he was well past his full parole eligibility date. And there was no slow, gradual release process for him. He ended up dying. A third guy, Rick Bennett, he was a Native guy. Actually, I started doing time with him many, many years ago in Mill Haven. He'd been abused as a kid. He committed a pretty serious crime, a very serious crime. It was many, many years past his parole eligibility date. He was doing life 10, and I think he had probably about 20 years in. Got transferred from a low medium to a high medium. He was using drugs to try and mask his sorrow, his pain, and when he went to a high medium, he overdosed and died. So, yeah, you know, things, prison conditions have improved, I guess, but over the years, I see more and more people dying. When I go into prison now, and I'm in there 4 or 5 days a week, I look around and I see an aging population of elder prisoners in there, and so many of them have given up hope and just are just waiting to die. They're just marking their time.
Rick, can you maybe talk a bit about some of the work that you're doing now? You visited many prisons across Canada, and you believe that there's not much difference in the kinds of conditions between these prisons?
Well, I mean, you know, in some prisons, the living conditions are better than they were in the past. I don't know whether that's a good thing or not, because along with the better living conditions, we've got longer sentences. When I first started, you know, a five-year sentence was a big sentence. Now, a 10-year sentence is considered a small sentence for many guys. Parole, I think, is a lot more complicated. It's a lot tougher to get parole. It's a lot tougher to stay out on parole. You can be sent back for virtually anything. Deteriorating attitude is one of the reasons you can be sent back. We still, you know, we closed prison for women because we felt that it was too inhumane. And so what's happened is we've created smaller prisons and we filled them up. So even though the conditions have changed, like I say, the time is getting longer and longer. Crime rates haven't increased. So I don't know. I just think there's a better way of doing it.
And Peggy and Gabby, your work on the inside, are people aware of this fact that crime hasn't increased, but the prison population is still increasing in Canada? You had mentioned some frustration with the hoops that people have to jump through while they're on the inside, the frustration with the process. But what about just plain frustration with the institution in itself?
Well, since we started, one of our goals was the stated long-term goal was successful reintegration of long-termers and lifers back into the community, and for an avenue to take other than drug abuse programs and alcohol programs, and something that would cater to some of their questions and some of their fears, because a lot of the guys we're talking about, like, you know, I know I don't really feel comfortable, you know, and I want to know what it's like. I want a gradual release. And what was happening in the prisons, at least here, I'm not too sure. There seems to be, like, all kinds of different information. But what was happening is that they were asking volunteer escorts to take guys out, as opposed to guards for escorted passes. That's, like, before you get your day parole or your full parole. So we signed up for that, and we did our training, and since all this started, this was maybe 3 years ago, 1999, yeah. We've gone through 3 training programs. We used to go up once a week, now we're down to twice a month. We've been bringing in different speakers talking about different stuff, but what was our original goal was to get a group of guys and go outside and do some of this stuff outside, and just to get the feel of being outside and in a better, more comfortable environment than what they might be used to getting, and with the escorts, the guard escorts. So it seemed like everything was to be in place. Our group, however, has been the administration in the prison has been completely resistant, even though we've gone through every single procedure that we have to. And we've got a community assessment, and the guys were really getting frustrated with that, and they couldn't really get their hands around why. One of the reasons is that we don't have what they say is gain validity and gain legitimacy, but you can't really get that without going outside and all that kind of thing. So the escort program for volunteers had been canceled, although other groups have been allowed to continue that.
Groups that they feel are legitimate, like groups that have been established for years, like AA. NA, anything that has to do with any kind of addiction, or church groups, let's say, are allowed, but our group's not.
And a lot of the guys feel that's really important. They were really looking forward to doing stuff like that, you know, and we had a little bit of affiliation with Concordia and QPERC, so they were really interested in being in that kind of an environment. So that was really disappointing. And
how was the environment, just for listeners to contrast what is considered a legitimate group, like Alcoholics Anonymous, or the church groups? How is your group different? What does Recon do that's different from those groups?
The only reason why Recon exists is because they had to play with different politics, and basically there was no English language group at the federal institution. So basically when we met up with the guy we were talking about inside that had expressed interest to starting a group, we went in and basically said it would be under this premise that we would do an English-speaking group because nothing else was available under reintegration. And I guess for them, I don't know what they conceive of. We've had different problems. Let's say we've heard about, I don't know what they conceive the group to be. They never attend. They don't know what we do, and yet they still believe that we're...
And this they is the prison administration,
yes,
who is so suspicious that they don't want to allow you
exactly
so much access and visits.
Some of the things that we were talking about is some of the realities the guys would be obviously facing once outside, things like unemployment insurance, employability, budgeting, welfare, pensions. Some of the guys have been asking about, do I get a disability pension for being in here? You know, like that's got to count for something, that kind of stuff. So, and of course, we'd rather, instead of getting speakers to go inside and talk about that, have them come outside and get the speakers to talk about that. Some of the politics that are going out both locally and internationally, to feel that, you know, there's a connection between all of this. So that those have been the goals. And
that's a bit different than AA or church groups.
Yeah, but the thing is, we were hopeful in the beginning because we thought, wow, what a great, it's a university setting. How could that be negative? You know, if you place yourself where the meetings would be held in a university setting, you know, you think they would encourage education. They'd be happy that it would be in this kind of context, but it didn't really make a difference.
The frustration with the institution and the administrators of the institution and the people that you're dealing with. Let's get into some of the repercussions of this institution. Rick, there had been some mention that health is a growing concern with inside these prisons. You had already mentioned that you see an aging population. Can you talk a bit about what the results of an aging population are and what the health status of these individuals are?
Well, I mean, just like in the community, health concerns are a major issue, but inside it's much more amplified because you don't have the options of going out and seeking treatment elsewhere. I know one case where a guy was complaining about chest pains and they told him to walk up to the hospital, and he died, you know, before he could get up there. Most institutions don't have a doctor on there throughout the week. He'll pop in here and there, but one of the things, and I'm not making moral judgments, but we see a lot of elderly people coming in now from crimes that were committed 20 and 30 years ago, particularly cases of sexual abuse. But these are people who've never been in prison before, and they're coming in as elderly people, they're shunned by the prison population. They're looked down upon, I would even say, somewhat by the administration. And many of these people are, they're just not in the best of health, and, it's putting a strain on the health care that's in the prison. Like I say, with the one guy that I know, Bob, when he was diagnosed with cancer, there was nowhere that he could be treated in the prison system, you know, where he was, so he had to go down to Kingston. To the old Kingston Penitentiary, which has been said for years that it should be closed. And that's what happens with many guys. There's another guy I know, he's got Parkinson's disease. He's not a threat to the community, but he's stuck in solitary in Warkworth because there's nowhere for him to go. And if somebody, one of the prisoners, don't take him out for a walk, well, he doesn't get out. So you're starting to see more and more of that inside. And with the longer sentences, too, you know, people are starting to, you know, not the best of diets and conditions like that. A lot of their health is deteriorating faster than in the community.
What are the diseases that you're seeing inside that are spreading because of the...
Well, we've got hepatitis. And it can be contracted, you know, many different ways, tattoos, sharing needles, unprotected sex, any number of ways. But it seems to me that every third guy that I talk to in prison has Hep C. And these are people that are coming back into the community, to their families, and because that's where the, you know, most of the prisoners are going to return back into the community. So if we can't address these concerns inside when they come back into the community, you know, it's putting the public at risk. AIDS, tuberculosis, there's a lot of tuberculosis inside some of the prisons, just any number of things.
Peggy and Gabby, you've both worked around prisoners' Justice Day issues before and organized various events to raise awareness around issues like health within prisons or injustices, various injustices that have occurred, including the deaths that occur every year here in Canada in our prisons. What is generally the response of the media, Ben? Rick is talking about some serious epidemics that are occurring in our prisons right now. If every third person he's talking with has some type of Hep C, and this is just not a headline that you see in the mainstream media at all. So how do you assess the media's coverage of prison issues?
The only time I ever saw anything that the media did that had an okay response to the concerns that people who worked around prison and prisoners had was about prison for women. Anyway, in my lifetime, in my consciousness, and just before the closure and that emergency response team thing that when the guards came in and tore the women's clothing and that kind of stuff. Just before the closing of Prison for Women, there was a good media response, but there had already been a will from the government, showing a will anyway, that they were going to do something. They had a task force involved and stuff. So you see that very rarely do you see any coverage on deaths in prison. What does get a little bit of coverage are police custody deaths or police shootings, which is a little bit different and kind of dramatized for a very small span of time and then just conveniently swept under the carpet and forgotten. Other than that, I don't know, Rick or Gab, if you guys...
The media's coverage, Rick. What do you think of the media's coverage? How come these issues that you raise and that Peggy and Gabby raise here, how come this is not big news for the mainstream media?
Well, I mean, it's people don't care. The bottom line is, you know, they see that as a prison issue. They don't see it as a community issue. And the prisoners come from the community. They're not born and raised in prisons, and they're coming back into the community. I think if people realize the number of people that are coming out of prison that have a communicable disease, such as hepatitis C, there would be a concern. I think if people realize that people with AIDS are coming out of prison back into the community, they would be concerned about that. Like, what are we going to do with these people? Now, a lot of people might say, well, we should just keep them in there, and hopefully they'll die and go away. And that's what Prison Justice Day is about. It's about talking about the realities of what's taking place and talking about the death and talking, because it's not just, you know, death for the prisoners, but their families and the community as a whole. So these are important issues. I think it's important that, you know, when I see, a prison where, a quarter of the population is Inuit, that are being brought down from way up, in the Arctic Circle, and we're bringing these people into our community and then sending them back up. We should be looking. We should be concerned about what kind of health care that these people are getting inside prisons. And are they contracting these diseases and bringing them back into their community? Those are important issues, not just for the prison, but for the community as a whole. And that's one of the things that I really see is we forget about people inside prison, and we don't hear about them until we hear a sensational case in the that something happens in the community. But what about the guy, the poor Inuit kid that ends up in prison and goes back up north and infects his family? Hopefully it doesn't happen, but I'm sure it has. And those are kinds of issues that we got to be concerned about.
Gabby and Peggy, your work within the community, do you find that people really don't know about the conditions within Canada's prisons?
A couple of years ago, we had, I think we were going up to either, it was either Prison Justice Day or up to the Prison Abolition Conference, and we were trying to figure out some questions to just ask. We were doing a workshop. So we said, let's ask, we work at a cafe too. So we said, okay, let's get these subjects, right? And we're going to ask them how much they know about prison and see if we've lost touch about what the common people think about it. So we kind of asked how many prisons do you think are in Canada? How many prisoners do you think in Canada? What kind of time do you think they're serving? How many lifers do you think are there in Canada? How many deaths do you think occur inside prisons? And it was unbelievable how underestimated they freaked when we would tell them what the reality is. So I think there's so much of a lack of awareness, so much a lack of information, and the information that they do get is often things like, well, there's a pool table now there, like when they had a Homolka article, something like she had a birthday party and she had a birthday cake or something, and they made huge news out of the fact that she's eating a birthday cake in prison, that should not be allowed. And I think that's the kind of media the kind of information the media is given out to the public, and there's a purpose to that, because if you would tell people the truth, people would not be so keen on supporting this kind of thing. I'm certain of that.
And Rick, you find that the saying that there's an agenda to the mass media's misinformation campaign around prisons in Canada?
I think so. It's all about negative publicity. And I don't think the prison system itself does enough to promote some of the positive things, if there's such a thing, that takes place in prisons. It's always negative news that's coming out. You never hear of any positive stuff that comes out. And there are some positive stories that come out of prison, few and far between. But, you know, people aren't interested in that kind of thing. They're interested in the blood and gore.
Yeah. There was, Rick, one point they had canceled the escort program up in where we're working because we're volunteering anyway. I'm not getting paid, but anyway, the administration for that. But there was two cases of parolees walking off, and that was in the news. You know, it was a small article, but nonetheless, you know, and as soon as that happens, and in one case, I think it was like an older man who kind of just wandered off, and they called that an attempted escape, you know, and that led to a whole shutdown of escorts for lifers and stuff. And that made the news. Not only did it make the news, but issues such as lifers on parole made the news. How you know that some lifer, 25 years men, they're getting out earlier, that kind of stuff makes the news. So they take an issue like that and make it into a huge propaganda campaign for different
based
interests.
On misinformation too,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
A lot of guys inside are past the parole eligibility date, yeah. You know, they make it seem like, oh, look, they're getting out, and look, you know. And then it's, you know, there's a little bit of a campaign that was going on to stop parole altogether, you know, because this older man had wandered off, and, you know.
Just to maybe bring this year's Prisoners' Justice Day to a bit of conclusion with the three guests that we have in studio, I want to thank you all for joining us, but to take a moment and think about alternatives and what can be done to kind of counter the direction that Canada is going. We've talked much this hour about the rise in the number of people and individuals who are incarcerated, but the crime rate is decreasing. So it seems like at the community level, we have responded. Crime has decreased. You know, violence in our communities has decreased, but yet the populations and members in our communities keep getting sent away, and the populations in prisons keeps rising. So what are we to do as community members? I would suggest, Gabby and Peggy, maybe if you want to go first, what are we to do as community members to change the course for Canada in its growing prison industrial complex?
Well, that's pretty difficult, because the way I view prison, I view it economically. That it's all economics, and basically they don't want to let go of their money, just like anything else, like you see that goes on these days. But I mean, if I'd have to point out something, maybe to start decriminalizing or legalizing stuff like, you know, drugs, you know, stuff that, you know, people are being put in, you know, for marijuana, which I think is ridiculous, you know. So maybe start to decriminalizing things so that people would be less apt to be put inside. Although I do think it would be an uphill battle, though, because of the economics involved.
Peggy?
I agree with Gabby. That's definitely a start. And lessening the time spent in prison if you're going to put them. Cut the time in half, straight up. Just do that and see what happens there. Test it anyway. Decriminalization, most of the people inside prison, not for anything, but for property crime. So get rid of that. When it comes to interpersonal violence, most people inside prisons die from everything but interpersonal violence when it comes to prisoners. So that's a little bit of a myth of where the violence is all coming from. Put some resources in the community. Let's be a better place to live in. And but decriminalization is, at least people are talking about that a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these days, yeah.
Rick, what about you and the work that you've done? You've been in various prisons across this country in the activism and organizing that you're involved with. What do you see to kind of change the direction in terms of solutions and changing the direction of where Canada's going with its growing prison industrial complex?
Well, I think we got to have a two-pronged approach. I think the first one is we got to invest more into our youth. I know here in Ontario, we have the zero tolerance policy with kids in school, and many of the kids are being expelled from school, and there's no place to go, so they end up inside prison to educate themselves. I think every kid has a right to education, and I think that's the community that has to respond. Second part is opening up the prisons to the community, mm-hmm. so that people can become more aware of what's taking place in prison. The community has a major stake in this. It's the community through their taxes and tax dollars that are going into this prison system, and they should be exposed to what's going on and finding out exactly who's inside and why they're inside and what's taking place inside and engaging with the prisoners, because these prisoners are coming back into the community, and it's better to have them coming back as whole people than destroyed people. So I think we should go.
Well, Rick, Gabby, Peggy, is there anything else that that you wanted to add to the discussion here that we didn't get to touch on today? But who is legal and who is the criminal?
So when they're talking about crime, 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 whoa.